Hello and welcome to The Catbird Speaks, the podcast for Baseball Prospectus Southside, regular podcast covering the White Sox for BP. I am your editor-in-chief, co-editor-in-chief, Nick Schaefer, here recording alongside my other co-editor-in-chief, Colin Richards.
What's up, Nick?
Smooth intro.
Yeah.
This is why I prefer you doing the intro. I just repeat myself and stumble over titles and things like that. So, but fortunately, I will quickly dangle shiny things in front of our audience and change the subject. We have two very special guests with us on this special episode. First, we have editor emeritus, James Feagan. Hey, James.
Hi.
James is kind enough to take some time out of his you're down in Arizona right now, right?
Yes.
So James is currently taking pictures of baseball players and asking them about baseball things, and he's also...
I drove home. Don't be ridiculous.
You drove all the way home to Chicago?
Yeah, correct. Absolutely. Every night.
Quite the commute.
Yeah.
It's like Connor Gillespie from Nebraska, or wherever he's coming from.
And we have another special guest. We also have Paul Boyett. Paul, are you where are you writing now?
Well, I guess that's a great question. I was actually very curious to see how you were going to introduce me and what titles you were going to bestow upon me. I think you could probably label me as a contributor to The Good Fight, which is a part of the SB Nation blog network, and also as a freelancer.
Wow. I was, I guess, just general Renaissance man.
See, yeah, Nick, the reason I wanted you to do the intros is because I figured you would know Paul's titles, and I did not, and I didn't want to ask. And then you just went and asked anyway, right on the air.
Paul's been mixing things up lately. He's making moves.
I have. I bounce all over the place. I just a few weeks ago did a short piece for Baseball Prospectus's Short Relief. So that's my connection to this whole establishment.
All right.
I got ties.
Alongside James. James still contributes there too, right, James?
Yeah,
I'm a weekly writer.
All right.
Well, I'm happy to say we can now finally figure out who is the king of Short Relief. By pitting you two against each other in a game that is solely based on skill and not luck at all. So obviously the BP annual just came out last Friday. It's about a week old, and I guess it's arriving for some people who've ordered their physical copy. Kindle copy is also available. And Colin and I wrote about 50-50, I'd say, split the comments on the White Sox chapter this year.
Yeah.
And
who wrote more?
I actually don't know.
I really don't know. It was really close because we had three deadlines, and we would split up each deadline about half and half or something, like, depending on who was busier. Like, I think maybe I wrote more for the first deadline, and then Nick wrote more for the second deadline. It ended up evening out to close to 50-50.
Yeah, and since my parents have not been – you know, they've emailed me saying, hey, we particularly liked this or that – and some of them have been mine and some of them have been Colin's. So if my own parents don't know who wrote them,
we should say that James presumably would be at an advantage here because James edited both of our work for several years, from basically the time we started writing about the White Sox until the time he left us for The Athletic.
I think my biggest advantage is that Colin is my son.
Yes, that is an advantage. I'm James' son.
Also, you're whitewashing history. We fired James.
Oh yeah, we did fire James. I don't like to talk about that. It's, you know, it's kind of a sore subject. You know,
it was due to the conflict of interest from the family ties.
Yeah,
it was for cause. So I thought it would be a fun thing to do is take turns that we'd read comments from the White Sox chapter and see if Paul or James can figure out which of us wrote it.
Oh dear.
Yeah. That's the reaction I was hoping for.
So Paul, who knows Nick well, Nick, I think you said you're a groomsman in his wedding, right?
And Paul was a groomsman in mine.
Yes. And Paul has never met me, and I think this is the first time we're ever speaking.
So, it might be.
So yeah. So he's basically gonna get to choose, does this sound like something Nick would write or not?
This is really balanced. This is really evenly distributed.
I love it. Well, I love it. This is going to go great.
Okay. So I guess – you know what? I'm going to do it this way. Since we're going to let James go first, just that Paul can get an extra listen on a comment, and just to make up for that once you've heard one comment, then I'm sure you and James will be on equal footing, because then you've had the same amount of exposure to our writing. James.
Yeah, I just kind of like, blindly publish your stuff for 3 years.
Yeah, you would slap, a funny picture on it and then call it a day. James, do you want a hitter or a pitcher?
I guess I want a hitter because I want to say hit me, and that seems more thematically appropriate.
Okay.
Hit me, Nick.
Okay. Adam Engel. There should be a spot for a player with Engel's skill set. A plus defender in center field with plus speed. Engel profiles as an ideal fourth outfielder, defensive replacement, pinch runner.
Wait, did he just guess it after 7 words?
Well, I'm gonna finish the comment. We'll see what happens.
All right.
What makes us far from a certainty is that he has yet to display any prolonged stretches of competency with the bat. The darling of the 2015 Arizona Fall League whiffed at a 31% clip in AAA in 2016 and followed that up with a 35% strikeout rate in his first look at the majors. The glove and speed are such that Engel merely needs to be run-of-the-mill bad in the hitting department to warrant rostering, but right now he's far from even that. He turned 26 during the offseason, so there may not be as much development left as you think.
Still going college.
Yeah, he's right.
Yeah. Okay. What gave it away?
I don't know. It was just matter of fact in a way that was very Colin.
Uh oh. All right, this is trouble. Although I think I think I slapped a little bit in there, but yeah, that's Colin's comment. Because that's the thing. We did. There are some of these where it's like a sentence or two was from the other guy, but
I think you wrote.
Oh, what? That's just poisoning the well. What the hell?
No.
Because we edited each other's comments before we submitted them.
Like, yeah, but no, that was definitely a Colin comment. So. Yeah. All right. So one for one. All right. Paul.
I'm going to be so good at this.
Pitcher or hitter?
You know what? Let's go with the pitcher.
All right. Let's find one here.
Okay.
This is good radio.
No, I mean, I think I.
Oh, you got one? No. Go ahead.
Danny Farquhar. Farquhar was one of a good number of random arms used to help ride out the season after the White Sox traded every reliever with any value in their never-ending quest to build the best farm system known to man. As far as veteran bullpenners in an otherwise lost season go, he served his purpose in as much as he fit the definition of not a train wreck. But Farquhar's White Sox legacy will likely go down as most commonly missed name in the Sporkle quiz on the 2017 White Sox roster.
So there's a Sporkle reference here. There's in as much used as one continuous word.
Correct.
There is a phrase used in quotation marks, not a train wreck.
So far, Paul has said 3 things that are correct. So I say you get 3 points.
I'm analyzing this out loud in an attempt to sound like I'm properly deducing and arriving at an answer through some sort of logic when really I have no
idea. I'm curious. I like hearing the process.
All these factors clearly have huge significance to you.
All of these things are just clues in figuring out this puzzle where I'm definitely not flipping a nickel off to the side and saying, heads, it's Nick, and I'm guessing Nick.
That is a Colin comment.
It is.
This is why I would be an impressive police detective. Up to the point where I arrest the wrong suspect. I'd find all the clues, I'd connect all the dots, and then it would immediately lead me to identifying the wrong person. I think that's what we're learning here.
That you're leading me, you're setting me up to make a very dark joke about the state of our justice system, but I will refrain.
I was really curious about his whole process there, about the formatting of it, and he was going to attribute it to Nick. I was like, dang, do Nick and I really write that similarly? Because I don't feel like we really do.
There are a few of these where I'm like, oh, I actually don't know.
For the sake of color, Danny Farquhar's running bit so far this spring is to walk in, see like the horde of assembled media and say like, I'll be in my locker in 10 seconds, guys, knowing that no one wants to talk to him.
Oh my God. I'm rooting for him, man. He was fine last year.
Yeah. And
I think he's for all of the money going to some of these relievers this offseason, like Farquhar for $1 million is more appealing than some of them.
I'd rather see.
I actually do want to talk to him, but like by myself.
So he's blowing up your spot by summoning scrums every day.
Kinda. I mean, because he pitched for the Rays, and they have a very like interesting perspective on like how they more rely on changing eye levels vertically than going side to side. And I kind of want to see what his take is on about it.
All right, James, well,
Gene. Pitcher, hitter.
I'll take hitter since I'm hot right now.
All right. I got one here. Casey Gillespie. Casey Gillespie is still just Connor's brother, as opposed to the other way around, particularly within the parts of White Sox Twitter where the elder Gillespie developed a devoted following after three spectacularly average seasons on the South Side. The younger Gillespie entered pro ball with a more promising pedigree, and his advanced plate discipline is what helped him reach AAA just 2 years after he was drafted. The offensive threshold for first baseman is such that he might not be more than a second division starter, but his ability to adjust gives him a higher ceiling than you'd expect from a player traded for Dan Jennings. He still has a chance to one day transform into the good Gillespie. I like that you try to guess mid-comment.
It's my flair. It's my signature sound.
So are you sticking with the Nick guess?
Absolutely. I don't confidently yell things and then back off.
Well, you are incorrect.
Damn it.
Ooh.
This podcast is over.
I remember reading that and thinking Colin was a little higher on Casey than I was.
I am surprised. I thought the Dan Jennings reference was going to seal that one for being Nick. I would have guessed Nick too.
I actually did interview Dan Jennings and didn't get a chance to write up the interview before he got traded.
Yeah. Ain't it always the way?
And my thought process in picking that comment was we read too straight of me. So I figured James think, well, obviously we're going to read a Nick comment now. So no, let's read one more Colin.
I like it.
I interviewed Dan Jennings to write an article based on how I thought he might be tradable. And then they wound up being something I used in reaction to him being traded.
Nice. No, that's you know, lemons, lemonade, and all that.
All right, so after a round and a half, it's still 1-0, James. Paul has a chance to tie it up here.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Hitter or pitcher, Paul?
I'm going to go back to pitchers again. I need to redeem myself on the pitching side.
Okay. I got one. Aaron Bummer. Most 19th round picks wouldn't be blue if they managed to line out in the BP annual. Bummer has earned his very own paragraph already, even after missing 2015 to Tommy John surgery, which was a drag. But that'll happen when you throw mid to high 90s with your left hand. And despite his struggles in the majors last year, he could still wind up as a setup man. That would be quite the opposite of a disappointment.
So first of all, I just want to say, even in this comment's brevity, I really appreciate the subtlety. I think it was a really great work. Getting in blue and disappointment and drag for Aaron Bummer. I feel like that's masterfully subtle, and I need to ask
Bummer
that.
If he's buoyed by the fact that he got a paragraph rather than a line out in the BP annual, if that's like a gauge for success that he
promotion.
Yeah. And if he likes the puns.
Yeah, the puns are fantastic. Very subtle. I'm going to guess Nick again, just because I feel like he and I share enough of a liking to the puns and this whole really deep cut, understated punctuation that's going on here. I feel good about this one.
And you, as you should, you've tied it up.
All right, there we go.
That's one of my favorite comments. That's one of my favorite comments of the year. Nick, I loved that one.
Oh, shucks. Yeah. I have learned recently, Jane and I started watching a lot of like British television, and apparently the word like bum as a verb, like bummer, bumming, all that stuff has a very different meaning in British vernacular. And it's a sexual meaning. So,
interesting.
So yeah, if you talk about being bummed to a British person, they do not think you mean what you think you mean. So we got a tie game after two rounds. This is very exciting. James,
are you feeling the pressure, James?
Self-hatred?
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like James was having a good time being out of spring training, working hard, getting warmer weather. So we thought, you know, maybe give him some sort of existential doubt.
I also do like it. It says a lot about this podcast that we have a White Sox beat writer spending a month in Arizona. He's been there a week now. And we bring him on the podcast not to talk about what he's seen and what he's heard, but to play a game and try to embarrass him.
Well, the thing is, the annual just dropped, and James is going to be there for a little while yet. So I'd still be happy to have, you know, do another one next week if James would indulge us and, you know, just grill him about spring training. But this just happened, and I'm excited about it. So, James, are you sticking with the bats, or do you want to go with a chucker?
Let's go pitching. My spirit's been broken by.
All right. I got one.
Chucker.
All right.
Gregory Infante. You're having breakfast in your kitchen and checking a box score for the White Sox in September 2017, thinking to yourself, oh, cool, there's someone else named Greg Infante in the majors. I wonder what happened to the old one. Then a stranger leans through your open window with overly dilated pupils and shouts, it's the same guy! You were scared to your core, but this well-informed eccentric goes on to explain that Infante's high 90s lively fastball has been harnessed just enough by Don Cooper to at least, for the moment, yield a usable reliever. The two of you discussed Infante for a few more minutes and then returned to your respective lives with a newfound respect for one another and the universe's potential to turn retreads into fireballing setup men with seemingly no rhyme or reason.
I'm going to go Nick.
That's right.
What was what justified that choice?
The pupils.
More or less... The prevailing theme is that Colin's kind of a normal person, and that you're insane.
See, you know, that's your
insane.
That's your nice way. You're being nice to me. You're saying Nick is funny and Colin is boring.
No, you're a professional, and I'm a child. All right, 2-1, James.
Apropos of nothing, just as an interlude real quick here, I'm leafing through my own copy over here as we go along, and I'm looking at Dylan Cease. And for those of you who might not be too familiar with the BP annual, underneath the stat pop-outs for the past 3 years and the projections for the next 2 years, in the bottom right-hand corner, they list three comparables for every player based on what these projections look like and how they've performed. And so I look at Dylan Cease, and my eye as a Phillies fan and writer are immediately drawn to the comps, because the first two comps there are Michael Stutz and Trevor May, who are sore spots in Phillies prospectum. A, Michael Stutz was sort of like this weird relief heartthrob for a couple of years there while the Phillies were good. He was kind of like the underdog everybody hoped would succeed. And Trevor May was a guy who was expected to be this – like lights out starter who just ends up getting traded for Ben Revere. Anyway,
I remembered May as a twin. I didn't remember that he started with the Phillies.
Yeah. I mean, yep. He was like sort of paired with Alex Meyer, where they were like huge, like probable relievers, but you know, oh man, if they were a starter, oh boy, sort of thing. And then they both were largely injured and bad. I think, I don't know if being developed in the Twins org helped at all. I'd never heard of Michael Stutz. I remember Radamus Liz, who was also, these comps are pretty spot on in that sense. I mean, like Radamus Liz was another guy who was like a tantalizing, high velocity dude who could never put it together
for Baltimore. Right.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember seeing, our prospect team caught him like shredding the Dominican League this winter as like a 35 year old.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, the comps, I'm starting to look more at the comps than I was before, this sort of second look through the annual here. And they are fun. I was just, Ender and Ciarte got, Richie Ashburn and Kurt Flood.
Whoa.
Which I thought was, pretty neat.
That's intense.
Especially for like a fourth piece for Shelby Miller. Do you want, you want an arm or?
I'm gonna flip flop, keeping myself in step with James here on the opposite side. I'll go with a hitter this time around.
All right.
Okay.
You got one, or you want me to do one?
I'm not feeling too strongly about any of these just this second. If you've got one,
Omar Narvaez.
Oh boy. Okay.
Narvaez owns a lofty 12.6% walk rate in just over 400 big league plate appearances. That's higher than the career mark of Kevin Youkilis, dubbed the Greek god of walks in Moneyball. Cute sample size stats aside, Narvaez hasn't demonstrated a similar ability in the minors, where his walk rate is more pedestrian, 10% in over 1,700 plate appearances. He also hasn't shown power at any level, with a slugging percentage south of 340 both in the bigs and down on the farm. He packs all the wallop of legendary sluggers D. Gordon, Jose Peraza, and Denard Span. On the defensive side, Narvaez has posted poor framing numbers in his limited big league tenure, which isn't a strong selling point. Still, as a catcher with plus on base skills, he could have value if he learns to steal the occasional strike for his battery mates.
In analyzing the words again, I have to give props for ending on battery mates, again being one word, and dropping a Kevin Youkilis reference. All of that being said, Colin, I feel like this was a you comment.
You are right.
Oh
man,
heating up now.
All tying it up.
Uh-huh. Are we playing NBA Jam rules? He does have two in a row, and he said heating up.
We might be in tournament mode now, baby.
So both of you have missed one at this point, correct?
Yeah, he's got the book out there with him.
Yeah, but it doesn't say who wrote them.
Yeah, he's able
to do textual analysis. I'm just
well, that counterbalances the fact that you have been reading our stuff for years.
Also, as we were drafting this, we were definitely like sending stuff into the Slack.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, as we all saw from my wonderful attempt at getting this first one right, it's not as if my actually being able to read the comments is really doing me any favors.
I'm playing this under protest.
All right.
Also for color, today Narvaez caught Alec Hansen's bullpen session, and afterwards his attempt to put his hand over 6'8". Alec Hansen's shoulder as he talked to him was really adorable.
Oh my god. Yeah, did he get any, what he got his like wrist up there maybe?
He got like a few fingertips over his shoulder as he's trying to like whisper into this guy's ear.
Narvaez is listed at 5'11". Would you say that's about accurate?
Yeah, probably. He's not like super short, but Alec Hansen is
6'8".
Straight up 6'9".
Like your photo of nice. Hansen and Dunning standing next to each other and just with the comment of Dane Dunning is 6'4". And Hansen is just towering over him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dunning looks huge. In that video you posted earlier today, it was really struck. Like, Dunning's huge.
He's a big dude.
Like, because his photos, he looks very lean in the face, and he's got his glasses, so he looks like this sort of, you know, he's very young in the face, too. So you're like, oh, this is, my head goes to a sort of slight guy. But then if you zoom out, he's freaking gigantic. So
Dunning looks like the headshots you would assume he's built like Dylan Cease, but he's a big, thickly built guy. He could murder Dylan Cease. Also, because he's bigger and they're right next to each other locker wise, so he'd probably have him done before anyone could pull him off.
And Cease is pretty brittle. So. At least to date. But yeah, James, I feel like you're shaken here. Like, what? How are you going to rebuild? How are you going to get back on track here?
A series of tell-alls where I make slanderous accusations against all of you for hating Young Long.
That sounds
good. Jitting up the results.
Is that a pitcher then?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay. Carson Fulmer. Fulmer's stuff, build, and mechanics scream reliever. The White Sox have been swimming upstream with this since day one, but their track record is such with pitchers that perhaps he can beat the odds. To wit, Fulmer displayed a dynamic cutter in his final few outings of the season, which, paired with his ability to hold mid-90s velocity over multiple innings, may yet allow him to Hail Mary his way into a rotation. Still, even as fans excitedly passed around gifs of Fulmer generating big swings and misses, the same clips showed him missing the target by a couple of feet. Fortunately, even the vast majority of analysts who believe this is reliever tend to think he'd be quite good at it.
I think it's Colin, if for no reason that it uses the term Hail Mary and his brain is hopelessly poisoned by editing college football writing all day.
I wrote that one.
God damn it.
Interesting use of to wit.
Ah, cheers. Transitional phrases I try to avoid repeating throughout the chapter. So like,
oh yeah,
I was kind of scraping,
especially if you're writing like 20 of them in one day, it feels more repetitive, and so you mix things up a lot more.
His comparables are Dustin McGowan, which, ouch, but Brad Hand and Andy Oliver. So I guess Brad Hand is the reasonable good career there.
That's reliever, though.
Yeah, but that's the reasonable, like, good career. And then I guess McGowan, if he didn't get hurt, because a lot of people loved McGowan before he fell apart. But yeah, so James is at 2 out of 4.
Paul can take the lead with this question.
Oh, my God. All I know about Carson Fulmer is that in playing some MLB The Show, the most recent version, is that Carson Fulmer is that game's version of Willie Mopena or Logan Kensing. I feel like that guy has a 15-year career as this shutdown reliever who I always come across in the playoffs. It's unbelievable.
I know exactly what you're talking about, but to me, that person in the show last year was Sam Freeman.
Okay.
Braves reliever. Sense. Braves reliever just has ridiculous stuff in that game.
I haven't played a baseball video game in forever.
The show is great. Perhaps
I should do that.
Paul.
Oh, yeah. So I think we should go. I think we should go with a hitter.
I'll
stay on the opposite side of the aisle.
Okay. Got Alan Hansen for you. The White Sox added Hansen to their never-ending collection of post-type prospects when they plucked him off waivers from the Pirates last June. Hansen emerged as a legit top 101 prospect in 2012 when scouts saw a shortstop with plus speed who regularly hit the gaps and showed a surprising amount of pop. Then he just kind of stopped.
Oh, my God.
Since getting his first taste of the majors in 2016, he's actualized the R in wins above replacement. His speed is still there, but he's far too strikeout prone, and when he does make contact, it's more of a one-hit wonder than a pop sensation. Hansen is still young enough to carve out a career as a useful utility guy, but if he doesn't figure it out soon, he'll likely wind up playing in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, my God. I'm angry, regardless of whether I get this one right or wrong.
Then
Colin
and I have won already.
Yes, you have. You can claim victory over me for this one.
Yes.
I'm going to go with Nick, though.
I'm wrong. flattered, but this game remains tied.
You know, before I wrote that comment, I did this with a lot of players. I went back onto their the player card page on Baseball Prospectus and read through previous year's comments. And there was 2 or 3 other Hansen references, so it's not really that surprising that I did a Hansen the pop band reference. But, you know, if it pissed Paul off, then I think that I'm pretty proud I did it.
Hooray.
They're still touring.
They are.
There's like a lot of – I guess it's because the people who listen to them are now no longer kids and actually have like disposable income. So a lot of the bands from that era are like – doing nostalgia tours and like crushing it. I think that the Backstreet Boys bring in like tens of millions of dollars on tour every year.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous, but I get it. All right. Would you like a bat, or would you like a dude who pitches?
Hit me.
Okay. Jake Berger. The White Sox drafted the beefy Berger in the first round, hoping his colossal college power numbers would translate to the majors. The meat of Berger's production will come in that form.
God damn it.
But the White Sox hope the toppings will include some cheese, a strong throwing arm, lettuce, good bat to ball skills, and tomato, keen sense of the strike zone. Berger may never be a deluxe prospect, given that he'll be limited to the corner out infield positions, and there are legitimate questions about how he'll hold up at third base as his already robust frame fills out. But if he can grasp the finer aspects of the game to go along with his sizzling power, he'll make some serious bacon.
Wow.
This guy is only in fucking A-ball, and I'm so fucking done of all the goddamn puns. I want him trade out of town.
How do you think he feels?
He's about to do some segment where Chuck Garfine takes him to a burger joint in the coming week. So
apparently
he's not tired enough of it.
No. It's also some nominative determinism, too, because he is a beefy boy.
He is.
Yeah, it'd be one thing if he weighed like $1.80 or something.
Yeah. He's listed as 6'2", 210.
That's bullshit, though. He's bigger than 210.
Yeah, I would think so.
His comps are Miguel Andujar, Jeffrey Marte, and Ryan Wheeler.
That what? Miguel Andujar.
Yeah.
Hey, are you going to guess or are you going to keep stalling?
Stalling.
Brutal.
I want to say Nick.
You want to say Nick.
You are wrong. So it's Paul's turn, and
all right,
he's got a chance to take the lead again. Do you want a pitcher or a hitter?
I would like a hitter, please.
All right. I got one. Mike Rodolfo.
Oh, my God. Okay.
In the mid to late 90s, when Men in Black delighted audiences everywhere, the White Sox made a habit of churning out power-hitting position players. Fast forward to the mid-2000s, and we had the execrable Men in Black 2 and the White Sox' dismal ability to produce any hitters whatsoever. The colossal
Adolfo
initially looked like a continuation of those busts, needing three tiers to get out of rookie ball. But just as Men in Black 3 rallied to be a solid offering, Adolfo went from having a self-described no approach to an approach in 2017 and posted adequate numbers in low A. The massive power and howitzer arm are still there, but his eye and plan at the plate must continue to improve exponentially as his bat speed is not a strength. Some hope beats no hope any day.
Wow. It's an amazing trilogy spanning Men in Black referencing paragraph.
Is Men in Black 3 that good?
Like, it was pretty good.
Oh. All right. Well, Nick jumping in to editorialize just now with Men in Black 3 was interesting.
Yeah, Men in Black was pretty good.
Because I was leaning Colin at the start, but now I think I'm going to have to switch back and say that this was a Nick comment.
Nick tipped his hand. Fuck. Gave Paul the lead. I have not seen Men in Black 3.
I am a better detective than I gave myself credit for. Yeah. That was all me. I did all of that work. I did not get any luck or any good breaks. That was all me.
Like I said, this is a purely skill-based game. Whoever wins deserves it.
Yeah.
Detectives are just walking into confessions all the time.
They do.
They do. No, I'm not being serious.
That was amazing.
Yeah, James, you covered some. Did you cover any crime when you were working in Indiana?
Tons.
Yeah, see, you're an expert. Okay, well, let's, James, it's not over yet.
A lot of ball game left.
You can also opt for a line out if you're feeling saucy.
Ooh.
I don't think that will help.
It's less information.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that's my issue with too much information.
Yeah, okay, well, what are you feeling?
Let's go bats. I don't know.
Like Joey Bats? Okay. Okay. I think I'm going to go with... Okay. Yolmer Sanchez. Years ago, Yolmer still went by Carlos Sanchez and was a 20-year-old who hit his way to AAA by way of obliterating the Southern League. A switch hitter who could handle shortstop in a pinch and look like a plus glove at second base. There was a lot to like, even if his ceiling was limited. Then he got blown away in his first three looks at the majors, failing to get his OPS above 600. And it looked like Sanchez would be one of the dozens of failed bats from the last decade. The rebuild, though, meant the White Sox could afford to give him one more shot. In his age 25 season, he converted his skills into roughly league average offense to pair with his defensive versatility and high energy personality. Beloved in the clubhouse, he looks like he's back on track to be a solid bench piece or stopgap infielder.
Colin, totally me down here.
You were guessing Colin?
Yes.
You are wrong.
Ah!
Dang.
Yeah.
James is terrible at this.
I'm going to go to work tomorrow and cry on Yolmer's shoulder.
I'm sure he'll comfort you. He seems great.
Yeah.
He would.
Wow.
James,
what a turn of events.
Him or Mike Rodolfo would probably not immediately freak out if I cried on the shoulder. Well, they probably would. That's still weird.
Paul with a chance to take a 2-point lead here. Pitcher or hitter?
Yeah. I think I'll go back over to the pitcher side. I'll take one more pitcher.
All right. James Shields.
Oh,
If you view Shields' 2017 season through rose-colored glasses, you see a pitcher who ate innings for a rebuilding White Sox team while providing valuable veteran mentorship to the club's plethora of young pitchers. The story goes that he even gave Lucas Giolito some key pointers while rehabbing at AAA Charlotte. If you take off those glasses, suddenly your eyes are pried open like Alex DeLarge, and you're forced to watch highlights of Fernando Tatis Jr. Until you're driven to insanity, and at the end of it, you're out $27 million.
Ouch. Wow. That took a turn in a hurry. again, with the movie references, though. But this time, though, I think I'm gonna stick with the Colin guess and say that Colin wrote this one for James Shields for the 2-point lead.
You are correct.
Oh, yeah. Oh, baby.
Actually, what's interesting is, Paul, you wouldn't know this, but Colin is the resident movie buff.
Yeah.
So him going with the – I mean, I went with the Men in Black trilogy, but Colin went
generally,
with, like,
generally, if there's a movie reference, you're about 80 to 90.
I don't think the Men in Black trilogy made us confusion about who was the movie buff.
No. Hey, 2 out of 3 good movies is better than most trilogies.
I need to watch Men in Black 3 now. I'm very curious to know if it's actually a good movie.
There's a baseball plot line in it as well. The 69 Mets are a big piece of it.
All right.
It's pretty nice.
James needs to get back on track. I don't know how many questions we have left. Nick's got to go pretty soon.
I think,
James needs
all right,
is there a lightning round?
We could – well, I mean, I said we could do lineouts. That would be the lightning round.
We could. Okay, but, here we go. At the end of it, we'll read the full paragraph of lineouts, one for James, one for Paul, and they can just guess with each player and
add
up the points.
Okay, but then – all right, then I've got – all right, let's do one more paragraph each, but I don't think that we should let them pick. Like, I've got one for James.
All right.
Oh, shoot. Sorry, I just got to pull it up real quick. I don't have a physical copy yet, so my flipping ability is a little bit diminished.
No, if this were Family Feud, you would just make this worth, like, triple the points to let me get back in.
Well, the lineouts will give you more opportunities. So right now you've each had – what, Paul's got 4 out of 6 and James is at 2 out of 6?
Yes.
Which, you know, 333 batting average, that's downright avassalian. But I'm going to give you Wellington Castillo, James.
Okay. He was signed early enough to be on the White Sox page in the annual?
That deal went in pretty early, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess, like, that's when contracts usually happen, actually.
Yeah, that's like normal. It was a normal winter contract because that was like early December, I want to say. In 2015, Castillo was flipped by the Mariners to the Diamondbacks for Mark Trumbo and a salary dump. In 2016, his new team non-tendered him. He then went on to sign the Orioles Memorial one-year under-market contract and enjoy the best season of his career. It was a fantastic season for the backstop in every way except in terms of testicles, as foul tips sent him to the hospital on two separate occasions with contusions. Those sad evenings, a bout of shoulder tightness, and the existence of tough right-handed pitching limited him to less than 100 games. And that's what a team should expect out of him. But the days of him being a cheap addition might be over. Castillo's framing skills have slowly crept from damaging to acceptable, which combined with a strong arm makes him a decent enough catcher. All he needs is a Steve Yeager of groin protection to invent a new cup, and he'll be ready for another fine season in 2018.
He really went to the hospital twice with contusions?
It was, yeah. I mean, he had two of them. He had to injure both of them.
I really got to ask him about his balls.
Wow.
I think it's Nick.
So you're wrong.
Oh, son of a bitch.
However, it also wasn't me.
What?
So I didn't actually answer James' astute question at the beginning.
They added Castillo to the fucking White Sox chapter late. I don't know who wrote it.
Whoever wrote the
fuck? Wow. You just got Shanghai'd big time.
Okay. That wasn't fair.
That's the joke.
All right, so James. All right. Luis Robert is an extreme version of what makes prospect watching so intoxicating and so dangerous. An immensely toolsy athlete who has annihilated overmatched competition in Cuba and the Dominican Summer League, Robert has also uncorked 80-grade run times, conjuring visions of dazzling center field defense and electric complete offense. The reality is he's yet to be tested against low A, and questions about how his athleticism will translate in-game against domestic professional competition abound. With the massive influx of talent to the organization, Robert is simultaneously perilously hyped and flying under the radar. Accordingly, there's a massive range of possibilities as to what you might read in this space, even as soon as next year.
A lot of pressure here.
Colin, please.
You're guessing Colin?
Yes.
Man.
Why am I so bad at this?
I think James expects from me only, like, totally off-the-wall lunacy. Like, he can't accept that I write any credulous work.
Like, wow.
Like, generally, I wrote more wacky ones, but, like, not that many more.
Yeah. All right.
Well, so let's get back in with the lineouts.
It's 4-2. Yeah, we'll give Paul one more, and then we'll get to the lineouts. I got one for Paul. The last one of the regular comments. Alec Hansen. It's been a whirlwind of a journey for Hansen over the last 2 years. He went from potential top five pick in the 2016 draft to someone whose stock plummeted after a disastrous junior season at Oklahoma, then to a potential revival project, to a bona fide prospect, jumping three levels during the 2017 season and putting himself squarely in the White Sox future plans. Hansen's improvement can best be attributed to improved command and a refinement of his changeup, giving him four pitches he's shown comfort using regularly. He's a pitcher, so of course there are no guarantees, but the quick development he's shown increases the likelihood that the Alec Hansen pitch face will be seen at major league ballparks much sooner than initially thought.
Yeah, I don't really have any insight into this one. I'm just going to go right for it and say Colin.
Dang, you are right.
Oh, God, I love coin flips so much.
He's another guy with the Trevor May comp on the list here.
He is. James McDonald.
Now, so the episode of Seinfeld where like people are going into Central Park and just digging holes and sitting in them and waiting to die.
I mean, this is inherently a coin flip game, so like, you know.
So I did really want to read both Nick's Derek Holland and Mike Pelfrey ones, but I didn't know if either of these two have listened to the annual drinking game episode of For All You Kids Out There, so I didn't risk it.
I have not.
No. Oh my God, you Mike get some Pelfrey.
You get some spoilers there.
Yeah. All right, so I guess how 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. There are 12 potential right answers in the hitters, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 potential right answers in the pitchers. So I think the fair thing to do with Paul leading by 3 is to give James the hitters and Paul the pitchers.
Okay.
Let's increase the drama here. And Nick, if you want to read the pitchers for Paul first, then we'll have James go last.
Oh yeah, and then we'll see if James can clear the bar.
Yeah.
Okay, I like that. All right, Paul, you ready?
I am ready.
Okay. Spencer Adams still has youth, athleticism, build, and control on his side, but someday he's going to have to miss some more bats, or he'll lose the benefit of the doubt.
Nick.
That is correct. Colin. Are you keeping
Jesus
score?
Christ.
Yes.
For a rehabbing relief prospect, Zach Birdie is about as safe as they come. He throws triple-digit heat and should profile as a late-inning reliever in 2019 unless his Tommy John surgery recovery goes poorly.
Nick again.
That's correct. Ian Clarkin has had a few arm injuries between now and when he excited a whole lot of Yankee fans. He's working on a cutter, but he has yet to clear 100 innings in a professional season.
Colin.
Incorrect.
Ah.
All right.
Bernardo Flores could be a diamond in the rough as a lefty with a plus fastball and interesting changeup, but there's a long road between him and the majors.
Bernardo Flores. That's actually – every time I – just as an aside, every time I play this game, every year, no matter who I play it with, no matter where I play it, there's always somebody I have literally never heard of before.
I bet you're going to get a couple more of those before this sliding round's over.
Just amazing the depths that this book goes to. Anyway, I'm going to go with Colin again on this one.
That was me once more.
Ugh, starting to stumble. Okay.
Okay. According to
I don't want to like jump over and like criticize the book. And I've heard reports of Bernardo Flores hitting as high as 97 on his fastball, but I also watched a game where he sat 86 the whole time.
Oh boy.
Yeah. I wanted to highlight him just because I thought he was more interesting than like the other, like who else would we have put?
He was like, very interesting. I don't think he's bad.
He was one of our last editions, I think, where we're like, oh yeah, we should do a line out on him.
I liked him better.
I've heard that he hit 97 once, but I watched him throw 86 and it was disconcerting.
He was like a late draft pick as a reliever out of college, I think. So they're trying to make him a starter. It wouldn't surprise me if his velocity was like all over the place.
That's the word, that it's like up and down all the time to like his pitching coach's frustration.
That's cool. That's cool to know, though. Actually, James trying desperately to make this useful to our listeners.
Make myself useful, given how I'm getting creamed.
Colin, I see an issue with this the symmetry here, but we'll see if it matters. Yeah. According to wrestling lore, WCW and WWE champion Bill Goldberg began his career with a record of 173-0. The unrelated Brad Goldberg's career hasn't started quite as well. So White Sox are probably asking, who's next?
I mean, this should be one I should know given wrestling references, but I don't. So it's going to be another guess, and I'm going to guess Colin.
Yes. If you knew me at all, then that would be a really easy one. That's why James said, oh, my God, in the middle of it.
Yeah. The tough thing with some of this stuff is that like you read a lot of people and just scanning it. My personal style is to scan a lot of articles. And
yeah.
Sometimes you just miss some of these things. I knew as soon as James reacted that this is one I should get.
Yeah.
But I had no idea.
James is giving Paul some good info.
Well, I mean, at the same time, I tried to think of it as like, did Nick watch a lot of wrestling? He kind of did, but I don't know if he worked
in
a wrestling reference.
Nick is friends with a lot of wrestling fans.
Yeah, some talk there, yeah. but not on the level of like Jarrett Seidler or something like that.
Yeah. All right, so
four left.
Jordan Guerrero, a big lefty whose best secondary pitch is a changeup, may wind up being a nifty find as a fifth starter.
I mean, that one's pretty matter of fact. I'm going to go with Nick on that one.
You are correct. AJ Puckett is a big physical right-hander but lacks a wipeout breaking pitch, which can serve to curby your enthusiasm.
What? Kirby?
Kirby. AJ Puckett.
Yeah, Puckett.
Oh.
Yeah. I thought that's what was happening there, but I wasn't 100% sure.
It's a visual pun more than an audio one.
It's good, though. Props to the person who wrote this, which was definitely Colin.
No.
Oh, all right.
Jordan Stevens was a clever buy-low pick in the 2015 fifth round as he came off Tommy John surgery. He profiles as a potential back-end starter or middle reliever.
Another guy I've never heard of. I'm gonna say Colin knows this one again, though. Go with Colin.
I don't remember, Nick. Who wrote this?
Oh, yeah. I wrote that one. With the last one here... With the combination of near triple-digit heat and a solid slider, Thiago Vieira has the potential to be a bullpen weapon if he can harness his command, which is something that could be said about dozens of other minor league relievers.
Yes.
Thiago Vieira has like this real groundswell and cult following, doesn't he? I feel like I hear that name more often than I do with other fringe guys.
Well, he used to be on the Mariners, so that kind of explains. I mean, the Mariners, everything just gets bullhorned.
Yeah, Thiago Vieira trade is extremely hysterical.
tell me more about that after I guess that, again, I got to stick with this now because I'm game theorying myself, that Colin wrote this one.
Well, you got Wellington Castillo'd there because that was another late ad, the last one.
Well, that's only fair. That's only fair.
I didn't even actually realize it until Nick started reading
that. That was the issue I was talking about because there's no symmetry.
And I believe, just for the entrance of full disclosure, I believe there's one of those in the hitters also, hitters lineouts. So we can.
Oh, so there's just one that just like there's no way I can get it. I should just guess every single one is the one,
right? Am I wrong about that, Nick?
No, you're right. So that's fair because we wanted to get an. We wanted them to have the potential to tie if they got everything right.
All
right.
So Paul is current. He got four in the lightning round. That means he is at nine. James needs – so what did I say? How many are there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. There are 11 if you exclude Daniel Palka, who is the one who was added. So you need 7 of 11 to tie, 8 of 11 to win.
Jesus Christ.
All right.
I talked about today. That probably won't help me.
Nick, you're going to have to help me remember who wrote most of these also again.
Right. The Vieira trade was funny because the Mariners hastily traded international bonus pool money or traded him for international bonus pool money like days before Ohtani announced.
That's right. And then, yeah. Didn't get him,
yep. And then hastily traded that international bonus money back out to get players back after Ohtani left for the Angels.
That whole thing was fantastically funny.
All right, James, you need 7 of 11 to tie, 8 of 11 to win. Are you ready for the hitters?
No, but start anyway.
All right. Alex Call missed most of 2017 with rib injuries. His calling card was his statistical performance in college and the hope that he could hang in center field.
Colin? No, he had calling card in it. That's a pun. Damn it, it's Nick, isn't it?
Which is your answer?
Colin.
I think that's right.
Is it?
Yeah, you wrote that one.
All right. I believe you. Okay. One of one. Ryan Cordell's numbers probably should have been better as a 25-year-old in the hitter-friendly PCL in Colorado Springs. But if healthy, he projects as a solid fourth outfielder.
Nick.
Nick, I'm letting you announce if he's right or wrong.
Oh, Jesus.
I think he's... Wait, who did he guess?
Do you even have like a list, or are you just like trying to remember?
Just trying
James,
to remember.
James, stop cheating! You don't get to ask about the answer sheet. Jesus,
is there an answer sheet?
No, what did you say? We're just supposed to remember what we wrote. And Nick remembers a lot better than I do.
I'm pretty sure. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
So here's the thing.
I'm pretty sure
here's
Cordell was me.
Is there a man behind the curtain?
Yeah, I think Cordell was Colin.
All right. So
smells like a fix.
Wait, did he get it right or wrong then? What did you get?
Wrong.
He got it wrong.
James, we're giving you more chances to get questions right. We're clearly not like cheating you here.
All right. Jameson Fisher is a polished college bat who held his own at both A ball stops, but is unlikely to be more than a backup at the highest level.
Colin?
That's right.
Alfredo Gonzalez hasn't hit at any level above high A, but his defensive reputation gives him a decent shot at making it to the majors as a backup catcher.
Colin?
Yes. That's correct.
Courtney Hawkins is the last vestige of an era when the White Sox drafted toolsy outfielders only for them to subsequently fail in spectacular fashion. At least we think he's the last.
Why'd you guys put Courtney Hawkins in the annual?
Just because he's a name that is probably still relevant to White Sox fans in some way.
Yeah, and I think Jared had written about him a bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's at camp.
This will probably be his last appearance, if I had to guess.
Unless he switches to pitching.
Yeah.
Pulls a and he's not switching this year. When is it going to come? All right. I'm going to go with Nick.
That was Colin.
Yep.
Damn it.
Jacob May surprisingly made the opening day roster, only to find himself back at AAA Charlotte shortly after the calendar switched over to his namesake month.
Colin.
Yes.
Yeah, Colin was getting the most mileage out of the May pun stuff.
Yeah. Good call by us, Palka. Keeping him a line out. Yeah, we can skip Palka. Okay.
He's at Major League Camp, but...
Who, Palka?
Yeah, no, May. I mean, Palka obviously
is. I assumed May would be at camp. Okay. Jake Peter.
He's not good.
Jake Peter is a slap-hitting second base prospect who doesn't slap quite enough to merit such excitement. Aptly, his name rhymes with Fake Jeter.
Whoa! I mean, I guess he's out of town. You won't run into him. that seems like Colin's type of humor.
Oh, come on! Nikki, we talked about that line out in the Slack many times when Nick wrote it.
Yeah. It rhymed.
Yep.
I love rhyming.
Should Tito Polo exceed expectations and become anything more than a fourth outfielder, it will leave New Yorkers lamenting, Han robbed the Yanks of Tito.
What is that supposed to be a reference to?
Well, this isn't going to be much help for you because it's a Simpsons reference.
Han robbed the Yanks of Tito? I guess Simpsons means it's a Nick thing, but yeah, let's go with that.
That's correct. Yeah, it's the Who Shot Mr. Burns? Tito Puente yells, he robbed the school of Tito.
All right, he James, does? You have you have three left, and you need to get two of them right to tie. If you sweep it, then you win.
Oh, God.
Despite having a larger denominator, I want to point out.
All right. Gavin Sheets was drafted as a power-heavy college first baseman outside of the first round. Sometimes these guys muscle their way to relevance, but you really, really have to hit to do that.
I'm feeling Nicky Beeps here.
You got it right. All right. Two more to go. Evan Skoug. Is it Skoug?
Skoug?
I should know that. Evan Skoug's ceiling is a catcher who can mash. But after contact issues and defensive questions plagued his senior season at TCU, that ceiling would dwarf Willis Tower.
Ceiling would dwarf Willis Tower?
Yeah, that's kind of a dumb...
Colin!
Damn it. I tried to stop myself.
I don't think Colin would just like straight up call my writing dumb.
Also, there's a typo in there somewhere. I don't remember. I think it would need to. Anyway. All right, last one. This is for the win. Otherwise, we tie. Charlie Tilson is a classic fringe defense and speed fourth outfielder with the fun added wrinkle that his lower body keeps breaking all the time, and we have no idea what will happen if he ever gets healthy.
Like, if I don't get this right, I have the same amount right as him, but I had more chances.
Or you could just get it right.
You had more chances regardless.
Would I have a higher percentage if I do get it right?
No. Maybe.
Quit stalling. Do you want me to read it again?
Let's run it back.
Charlie Tilson is a classic fringe defense and speed fourth outfielder with the fun added wrinkle that his lower body keeps breaking all the time, and we have no idea what will happen if he ever gets healthy.
I'm going back to Colin. I was originally thinking Nick, but I'm going with Colin.
I wrote that.
Dang, I thought you were going to get that one.
I would have gotten it if I didn't have it read again. It was the second time where I switched to Colin.
Paul, you've won a meal for two cooked by my wife.
I love coin flips.
Tie goes to the Paul.
Oh, yes, it does.
Oh, James, man. It's
James,
beautiful.
You've embarrassed...
This is
yourself.
This is Russell Wilson getting picked off of the goal line.
No, because Paul won. So this is Burton throwing a touchdown pass to Nick Foles.
There you go.
Beautiful.
There you go.
So beautiful. Thank you for that reference. You just like brought a swell to my heart. I could feel my chest rise. But
it could be Reggie Bush pushing Matt Leinart across the goal line in Notre Dame Stadium for James.
He's piling on. Although
I think that I'm Ambrose Wooden getting burnt by Dwayne Jarrett on 4th and 9 earlier in that drive.
I've got to wrap up. Thank you guys so much. That was fantastic. Paul, do you have anything that we should keep an eye out for coming up?
In terms of what?
Any writing or audio or?
Well, if I can cross promote over platforms and publishers, The Good Fight has its player preview sections that have started going live at the end of last week. Justin Clue had a piece on Rhys Hoskins, and Ethan Witt had a piece on the outfield as a whole. And we're going to continue to post different ones of those coming up over the next couple of weeks leading up through spring games. And I am going to be writing about Hector Neris. So that doesn't have a set published date, but that will be coming relatively soon.
And you can follow Paul on Twitter at Paul_Boye, B-O-Y-E.
Yes.
Thank you so much. James, I assume you're just churning out insane amounts of spring training content over at The Athletic?
Yeah, I'm going to be writing The Education of Jake Berger tonight.
All right. We'd also be remiss to not mention that you can read all of those comments and more in the 2018 Baseball Prospectus Annual, which you can find on Amazon.com, probably
with an essay from the excellent David Roth.
Yes, David Roth wrote the White Sox essay this year. It's as Nick says, excellent.
Or you can steal it out of my mailbox before I get home from Arizona, because it's probably sitting there.
All right, thanks a lot, everyone. We'll talk to you next time.
Pleasure was all ours. Thanks, guys.